Now hear from the tiny epistle of 1 Peter, chapter 2, verses 9 and 10, where the followers of Jesus are told to live boldly as a royal priesthood. You can find it in your pew Bibles on page 233 of the New Testament. But you are a chosen race, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's own people, in order that you may proclaim the mighty acts of him who called you out of darkness into his marvelous light. Once you were not a people, but now you are God's people. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. The word of God. Thanks be to God.
Good morning, everyone. I am delighted to be speaking today on such a powerful notion that affects us all in the faith, this idea of the priesthood of all believers, that you're going to hear me using that phrase a few times as we unpack this reading and look at what it means for us. But I can't begin without acknowledging the pain many of us feel with the burdens of the church, and to open your Record Eagle today and see on the front page that local priests of our Roman Catholic brother and sister parishes have been found to have sexual indiscretion and charges levied there. And I just want you to know, perhaps you feel the burden too, and I'm praying for our Catholic brothers and sisters to work through this and to help the whole church be more healthy. But I want to say that when we use this word priest today, and I hope I really stretch the understanding of what that word means to you and me, I mean it in the powerful form of being a servant changing this world, as Christ so embodied. In the early service, at the well service here at 9 o'clock, we cut up all these strips of fabric to resemble a stole. In fact, there's some extras up here. You might be moved to come and take one with you too, as many did this morning. Because we connected the notion that, did you know this little bit of raiment that clergy and priests wear call a stole? We have many fancy ones, Dale and I have, but in its origin, it really came from Christ having a towel around his waist and kneeling and washing feet and being with people in the hardest, dirty places to bring dignity and wholeness and redemption. That's a notion for wearing this stole, and I think that is the clearest understanding of being a priest in the way of Jesus. So with that as a background, I want to introduce you to Father Frederico Gomez Esparza. We have his picture there. Father Frico Gomez de Esparza was a beloved Catholic priest in the area of Yuma, Arizona. And he was really, by all indication, really much beloved as a priest. He performed the sacraments. People loved him when he preached because he seemed to have this charisma, this great message. He met with people who were searching, and he sat with them with great compassion, and he did all the things that you would think a clergy and a priest are supposed to do, right? But in time, it was found out that Father Frederico Gomez had no credentials. He was a priest with no ordination. He was merely posing as a priest without having gone through any formal training. I guess you could say he was a counterfeit priest. He even used a fake name when he was hired in to serve the church. Why, you can imagine the parishioners who trusted him were aghast to know that Father Frederico Gomez was not who they thought he was. Now, this little story, true story, about a counterfeit priest, it got me thinking about how perhaps anybody could do this job of pastoring. What do you think, Dale? Huh? Talk about it later. But more seriously, that story, when I was doing research through the week, kept popping up for me as an interesting backdrop illustration to what are we talking about in this notion of the priesthood of all believers, that is a notion we can all wear as our mantle. We're talking about that today. And let me say up front, if you're here and you think the priesthood of all believers, but I struggle with belief. If you're someone for whom belief and doubt seem to be intermingled, and some days you're not quite sure how much you embrace all of what is Orthodox faith, that is okay. I still think this rich concept today has something for you, for all of us to take away. To the truth be told, the teachings that are so powerful in the church over these 20 centuries is that in our baptisms, we are equipped to do the things of ministry, to sit with broken people and speak encouragement, to stand up for the ways of justice, to be with people on the margins and be advocates with them, to speak justice and mercy into their lives, to roll up our sleeves and to love children and elderly and speak truth and kindness into their lives. All of those things, you and I are invited into that work together. That is our work as the church. So in that sense, we are all ministers already, and we live that out already. Now, I'm not saying that all y'all should go online and pay that $10 to get your quick and easy ordination online certificate, although I know those are out there. No, but I do believe that by our baptisms, even if you, like me, cannot remember your baptism, but others have told you about it when you were young and small, we are all card-carrying ministers. We each have got some street cred, even if we don't know it, some authority by which we can act out our faith in ways that influence others and lead others. This notion of influence is really what I want to get at a few times today. So Peter, the guy who's credited with writing this passage we're looking at today, you've heard of Peter, yeah? Peter, one of the apostles, one of the disciples. Peter, I'm always drawn to Peter because of that high and low way of Peter. Some days he so gets it and he shouts out his enthusiasm, "You are the Christ, I'm going to follow you to the ends of the earth." And then other times his allegiance seems pretty wishy-washy, doesn't it? I appreciate Peter. I think he's someone we can all relate to. Peter is the person credited with writing these tiny epistles tucked in the back of the New Testament, writing to a persecuted, struggling church trying to find its way in the first century. And Peter is getting at some interesting notions today. I want to look at exactly what is this reading about today that we heard read. Well, having challenged his readers to live differently than the exploitive Roman Empire culture that was surrounding that church. Can you appreciate that? Church struggled in those early years to have an identity and to be safe in meeting when the Caesar of the day, the head of the Roman Empire, would be demanding allegiance to them as if they were a god. They thought they were. And yet if you were someone who said, "No, the risen Christ is my God, who I will orient my life around," that was treasonous in the Roman Empire. So, can you appreciate Peter is writing to this community, encouraging them to stand, to not be dilute who they are. And he said, "I want you to be encouraged, for one thing, when you join the new community of God, which is the church, there are some real privileges about that membership." See, when a person decided to become Christian in the day, often it would be a verbal confession, and often you demonstrated that allegiance by being baptized. And from that moment, Peter and others would say, you could see the church is your family. In fact, Peter in this same chapter refers to the church as being like your spiritual home, your base from which you find your energy and your unconditional acceptance so you can go out and live boldly the life of the gospel. In fact, sometimes maybe you hear us here at Central talk about Central being a spiritual home that grounds us all. I think that's great and rich language. But then Peter, who seems to like to mix his metaphors up, drops this bombshell of an idea that you are all priests. You're priests. Yes, ordinary Joe Blow in the pew, and really anyone who's trying to live in the way of Jesus is someone who's to function like an incognito priest in service to God, proclaiming hope everywhere you can, leveraging your influence to speak hope and a new way of living. So after Peter has kind of done this little bit of thing of your church is a spiritual home, you all are a royal priesthood, then in his letter, he tells people, hold on and be encouraged because God is about to do a new thing. In fact, God is continually doing a new thing. Can you see it? Now, there's a fancy word for this. Whenever the scripture speaks of the old passing and something new coming in, it's eschatology. It's just the making of new things. And it's really a rich notion that comes in the Hebrew scriptures as well as in our Testament, the Gospels. But this idea that something new is going to break in, maybe it's going to happen in the future. This is the stuff of hope. Always knowing there's more. God is at work in ways that have not come to their complete fullness yet. That is so germane to our faith. But don't you sometimes hear people, I think well-meaning religious people, saying that God is going to bring about a change, but he's going to end this world to do it. I remember there was a guy downtown some years ago that had a sign that kind of essentially said that, the end is near. That's been popular since the first of time. But I want you to know, in this little eschatological letter that Peter writes, there is nothing to say in there that when God brings in something new, that he's going to end this world to do it. No. Most biblical writers would say what God is bringing about that's new is going to break into this world, not something that's set aside that has to end what's going on in the world as we know it, in this beloved world God has created. I think that is a very important notion. God is about turning things on their head and ending things that don't give life and beginning things that do give life, but God doesn't insist on ending this creation to do it. He just reforms it. And it's here, in this realm, this life, this world, that we Christians are called to be a priestly community, leveraging every angle at our disposal to bring about that new way, that new realm. Hey, you maybe knew that a few weeks ago, I got to escort our eighth graders on a confirmation trip to Chicago. And one of the houses of worship we went to was the Serbian Orthodox Church, with the beautiful iconography filling the whole ceiling, and the priest in these robes that were so beautiful. I told the youth, you could get me some of those. Those really looked nice. And the cincture and incense announcing holy space. And while the service was a little long for the youth who were with us, as we talked about, we did talk about how the priest was dramatizing in all the flair and pomp that he could that God was at work in the world through the symbols and the movement and the art that surrounded us. I think that's what a good priest does, leveraging everything at the priest's disposal to point people to God is at work. Do you see it? Maybe even you have to look for beyond what's just around us to see it. Oh, friends, around our Thanksgiving tables this week, in the Christmas shopping season, perhaps it's already started for some of us, but these next 6 weeks or so, may we be like priests who elevate other people and causes and the dignity in all people. This is the use of spiritual influence. May we decide now how we're going to approach the use of resources and relationships and the cards that we write so that what happens is not just spending money on more stuff. Do you hear me? I'm thinking about the line attributed to St. Francis. Do you know it? That goes, preach the gospel always. If necessary, use words. I love that. I really am. I'm going to say it again because it's a great takeaway. Preach the gospel always. If necessary, use words. Good priests don't always have to use words to draw attention to what God is doing and to point others there. Now, I want you to hold on to this idea here. We're talking that Christ's followers are to be a priest of sort, using their influence to point people to high values. And I want you to time travel with me a few centuries forward from the first century where the church was trying to find its way in the beginning on up to the 16th century where a tectonic shift happens in the way the church comes to understand itself. I want to spend a minute talking with you about the great reformer Martin Luther. Martin Luther lived in the 16th century. I like this rendering of Martin Luther. He lived in 16th century Germany. Now, Martin Luther's dad, his father was a member of the town council, very influential and rich, and he had already made it clear to Martin that, son, I want you to go to be an attorney. And Martin Luther said, okay, Dad, and he went to whatever the equivalent was of law school back in 16th century Germany. But soon in, he just was plagued with these religious questions, these faith questions about what matters and where he saw corruption around him, wondering if his life of faith could express that in helping the world be better. So Martin Luther has this incredible experience one day where he writes later that he thought a bolt of lightning had come and struck the ground very close to where he was standing, and he took that as a sign from God that he needed to do something very dramatic with his life. So Martin Luther up and became a monk. And his father promptly said that was a total waste of a good education. But he became a monk, and while he was at the monastery, Luther trained to be a professor of Bible. And during about this time, as he was studying in the monastery, officials came over from the church in Rome, headquarters of the Roman Catholic Church, came over to Germany to do what they did every year about this time and do their big fundraising campaign. You know what they were raising money for? They were remodeling St. Peter's Basilica Church there at the Vatican in Rome. It took a lot of money. You've been to the Vatican? So Martin Luther thought, okay, I guess this is what they have to do. But he was rather alarmed because the financial raising pitch that the officials from the Roman church had went something like this. okay, everybody. Now, I know you've probably been led to believe that your faith is enough to put you in good standing with God. Once you die, you're standing there before the throne. Well, we're here to tell you that it's not quite enough. That you need to also not only have faith, but have signs of charity. You understand charity? And not only do you need to give large amounts of money to the church to demonstrate your charity, but you also need to dig a little deeper if you want any of your relatives to be brought out of purgatory and have a life in heaven. Anybody see a problem here? It was as if these priests and bishops, though not all, but this corrupt group that Martin became more aware of, was more in the money-making business than the disciple-making business. And the church always gets in trouble when those two things become confused. So this led Martin Luther, by his conscience, to protest against this practice in the church and many other practices. And one really big idea that he said was important to claim again for all of Christ's followers in the church is this notion of the priesthood of all believers. There it is again, right? Luther felt that the focus that had been happening of late, of so much emphasis on clergy, on those who were the officials in the church, really was doing a disservice to the gospel because it denied or beat down the identity in the common person to see that God was using them too in their life, by their vocation, by their role of wherever they were in the church. Can you appreciate that back in that day, If he wanted to have any sense of reconciliation with God, it was always to go through the priest. The priest was the gatekeeper. If you wanted to know what God was thinking or what the scriptures meant, you must only depend on the priest. And if you attended the high mass, there the priest would have his back to the people and facing God and the altar, as if the encounter of Eucharist was just between God and the priest. This is so important, friends. The laity is the term we use for everyone except the clergy or the priest or the pope or the bishop. The laity, true calling, is not to try and do what the priests and pastors do, but it's to connect their faith to where they are in their life as a parent or a physician or trash collector or a judge or banker or student or retiree, a student, a teacher, cashier, all those things and more, so that there is no divorce between sanctuary and shop, between worship and workplace. There are no two classes of Christian citizens, the ordained and everyone else, where somebody knows the secrets and the others do not, and there's a caste system of belief. See, when Luther referred to the priesthood of all believers, he said that the plowboy and the milkmaid could do priestly work. In fact, their plowing and their milking were priestly work. Now, some of us thinking about this today might feel like that's not very radical. It makes total sense that the way of Christ is always calling us to be change agents using our influence, call it priestly, call it whatever you want, that no matter what our vocation or avocation is, we can use our influence for the things of God in God's way. But I believe this is our lifelong work, to keep asking that in a fresh way. When we're parents of a newborn, the question is a little different than when we're parents of the four-year-old or the teenager. When we begin our career and we're very conscious of trying to get to a place of stability and raising family, asking the questions of Christ, how might I serve you in this moment, in this chapter, is a different question than when we're in mid-career or when we're retiring. I'm always intrigued to talk to people at the point of retiring, especially men, because it is a moment of crisis to have to reframe what purpose means, that you're no longer filling a role, but you're finding meaning in other forms of volunteerism and avocation and relationships and building other people up. I do think our work as people of faith, friends, is to always ask in a fresh way, Christ, what is your call to me now to notice and to encounter? What are you calling me to love and invest in? What are you calling me to ignore and give less emphasis to? Okay, I need to offer a word about the Reformation before we step away from that chapter. And I appreciate a bishop in our church, Bishop Ken Carter, reminds us that when we Protestants are talking about the Protestant Reformation, that it's not true that Protestants somehow get it and Catholics don't. I really do think this is important because, you know, in the Roman Catholic Church, at the time Luther was doing his protesting and reorganizing, the Catholic Church was doing its own counter-reformation to ferret out its poor practices and coming back to the basics of healthy ministry. Did you know that just a few years ago, the Catholic Church signed agreements with the Lutheran Church and the Methodist Church that salvation is by grace through faith? And not that long ago, it was Pope Benedict who admitted that Martin Luther had correctly interpreted the book of Romans on the subject of grace by faith alone, or salvation by grace alone. See, in the history of Christianity, you know, we all have things to learn. Or as Karl Barth, the theologian, says, I appreciate, the church is always to be reforming. The church now, brothers and sisters, is continuing to reform and ask the questions of what does it mean to be in ministry to all people. Our denomination of United Methodists are asking those big questions of inclusion right now. May we continue to be reformed in a way that carries Christ in a relevant way to the current culture. Having said all that, I want to close with a little story that's happened in the news this week that, to me, embodies well what it means to have a role in this life and to understand it as being a calling. With so much sadness coming out of California recently with the fires and those poor folks in Ventura County also had the hate let loose and the killings a while back, I was really drawn to this story. Maybe you caught it on your own news feed as well. So it seems that Dane Cummings, who is a trash collector in California, Dane Cummings drives for Waste Management, drives one of those big old green trucks. Dane Cummings was doing his rounds last Thursday when home office called on the walkie-talkie in the truck and said, get back to home office right now. We're concerned about the wildfires that have been enclosing there around Paradise and now in this community of Biggs, California, where he was driving. But Dane said, you know, I need to ask, give me a little longer, you know, some of my routes, my customers, I'm really trying to be faithful to. I want to make sure they got out. So he keeps driving around some of the roads, more looking for people than trash at that point. And he notices there on the side is 93-year-old Margaret Newsom, who has been a customer of his for several years, and how she's standing out on her front porch with her walker. As she started describing what was going on, she said, everyone in the neighborhood left so quickly, and now the power isn't working, and cell phones don't work. And here was this woman on a block of houses by herself, standing at her walker as a 93-year-old. So Dane Cummings walks up to her and says, you're coming with me, Margaret. And she knew at that moment not to argue with him. And he got her walker, and he straps it to the front of the big garbage truck, and he comes and he lifts her up and carries her and puts it in her in that high cab and straps her in the seat belts. And they start off on a drive of 5 hours that they said was unlike anything they had ever experienced. Dane says, the smoke, you thought that you were stepping into hell. But Margaret quickly added in the interview, I just told him to keep driving. We're going to be just fine. At the end of the article that came out, she says, he's an angel. I just love him to death. Angel. Priest. Trash collector. Sometimes, by grace, those get to be all in the same person. Sometimes, by grace, we get to be that person. Amen.